Today, we are marking the life of a rock and roll icon. Kurt Cobain died 25 years ago today after a short and brilliant career. From 1991 to 1994, his band Nirvana was one of the biggest in the world. At the height of his fame, Cobain sometimes seemed like an unwilling participant who'd been just swept up and carried away by Nirvana's success. But a new book reveals that Cobain was far more in control and calculating about the band's success than his public persona suggested. He was smart, he was savvy, ambitious, and he wanted Nirvana to be a global sensation. The book is called Serving the Servant, and it's written by Nirvana's former manager, Danny Goldberg. He met Kurt Cobain and his two bandmates in 1990. At the time, Nirvana was an obscure punk band from Washington State. They were looking for management and a better record deal.
Well, for the first part of that meeting, he hardly said anything. Chris did a lot of the talking. And then at one point, I asked them, do you want to stay on the indie label? Because you never know with punk bands whether they had a horror of major labels or whether they wanted to access those systems. And Kurt suddenly piped in, no. Making it clear that
he knew what he wanted.
That he knew what he wanted, that he wanted to leave the indie and be on a major. And it also made clear to me that he was the boss, because although they were three amigos who shared a vision, Kurt wrote the songs, he was the lead singer, he was the lead guitar player, he storyboarded the videos, he designed the album covers, and he made the decisions.
You frequently describe Kurt Cobain as a creative genius. Can you talk, though, specifically about what you believe made him so extraordinary?
Kurt had many unique insights, one of which was he was somehow able to combine what he liked best about several genres. Culturally, he was deeply influenced by the American punk rock scene of the 80s, but he also had a great appetite for pop. All of the guys in Nirvana did. They all loved the Beatles, and it was like a guilty pleasure. They would coyly call it the B word.
Why? Because it wasn't indie enough, it wasn't cool enough.
Yeah, and it was older, it was hippie generation.
Right.
And Kurt also admired a lot of the music of heavy metal. He didn't like the macho lyrics and the posturing. He was determined to subvert the cliches of the macho frontman and to convey a sensitive, compassionate way of rocking hard. He also had this comprehensive, crystalline understanding of all the other aspects of connecting with a mass audience. Again, he paid a tremendous amount of attention to the videos and the artwork. He did hundreds of interviews, and he had an exquisite sense of balance of how to stand for something without being boring, how to be entertaining without being shallow, that he thought about a lot. He was almost kind of 24/7 reinventing this Kurt Cobain persona. There were things about fame that he didn't like, and he had personal demons, which are widely known. But the success that he had happened on purpose, not by accident.
When did you realize that he had an addiction problem?
I know the exact time because a lot of us realized it around the same time, and it was in January of 92 when the band did Saturday Night Live for the first time.
Come on, people now! I want your brother! Everybody get together! Try to love one another!
Nevermind had come out a little more than 3 months earlier, and during that 3 months they had gone from being, you know, a cult artist to literally having the number one best-selling album in the United States. Displacing Michael Jackson album. I had been on vacation, and when I got to New York, there were two faxes. In those days, there were no internet.
I remember them.
Of articles by journalists who'd seen him a couple of weeks earlier, and it was very clear they were implying that he was on heroin. Mm. And then I saw him, and he was stoned a lot of the time that night. We scheduled an intervention with him and Courtney.
His wife, Courtney Love's wife.
And six or seven of us confronted them and prevailed upon them to get treatment.
Goldberg says that week they did that first intervention, Kurt and Courtney got another surprise. She was pregnant. Goldberg says she stayed clean for the rest of her pregnancy. But just before the baby girl was born, Vanity Fair published an article alleging that Courtney Love used drugs throughout her pregnancy. It became a huge scandal, and the couple nearly lost custody of their child.
It was just so humiliating and terrifying to have to go through, and caused a certain level of anxiety that often bordered on paranoia about the media, and an awareness of the level of scrutiny of Kurt's personal life that he hated.
Did you ever have any indication that he was someone who was in emotional crisis, suicidal?
Oh, sure. Oh, well, he was definitely was prone to depression. Everybody around him knew that. And he had this struggle with heroin, which didn't end after he got clean. I mean, that first intervention did work, and he was clean for many, many months after that, but not for the rest of his life, obviously.
Danny Goldberg, along with Courtney Love and others, attempted another intervention, but Cobain refused to stay in rehab. And on April 5th, 1994, he shot himself. Goldberg was in a meeting in New York when he got the call. You were close.
I loved him very, very much. You know, how close we were depended on which day of the week and which hour of the day. There were times when we really had a brotherly kind of intimacy, and there were times when he would have an opaque look in his eyes and I couldn't get through to him.
I don't know if reverence is the right word, but even in the book, you acknowledge that you looked at Kurt Cobain and his career through sort of rose-colored glasses, and you're unapologetic about it. You just say, listen, I love this guy. I think he was a genius, and that's what this book is.
Yeah, it's a love letter. It's my description of working with him. It's incomplete. I didn't hang out with him all the time. I didn't play music with him. I was of a different generation. But I did spend enough time with him to really feel I knew him, and I make no bones about it. I'm an unreliable narrator because I'm talking from the point of view of really admiring and loving the guy.
Danny Goldberg is the former manager for Nirvana. His new book is called Serving the Servant. I'm so happy.